Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
There are so many reasons why I got into teaching.
One of the best things is the light bulb moment.
When you see a pupil suddenly understand something, that's really, really special.
Every child is so full of potential. And the thing that makes me proudest to be a teacher is seeing them realise what they are capable of.
I don't think any other job can give you the same satisfaction.
That's why I chose to teach.
You could get £26,000 tax-free to train, search, apply to teach. Selected subjects only, subject to eligibility.
Ladies and gentlemen. Broadcasting since 2005 with over 3 million downloads. You are listening to Gamer Tag Radio with your hosts Godfrey, Pete Rock, Paris, Poston, and Lady Luck.
I won this one.
All right, welcome to Gamer Tag Radio episode 452. And guess where we're at, Paris?
We're in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Yes,
thank you.
Paris Hotel.
Paris is inside.
So this is
Paris.
Your hotel? This is yours?
Yes.
This is all yours?
This is mine.
Change of bed sheets.
Nah.
Oh, and by the way,
I laid in them and rubbed around before you.
We have a special guest.
Yes, introduce yourself.
I'm Robert the DCD Workman, longtime fan of Gamertag Radio. I mean, you guys know me. I do a lot of podcasts and work.
If you look at my Facebook,
stuff. You'll
see a lot of pictures during E3 and things like that.
Drunk
with me and
ones.
Him making stupid faces.
Drunk ones, yes.
Yeah.
Hey, it's not my fault. We found the selfie machine last night at the Link, and we kept hogging it, and all the tourists got mad. It was terrible.
Awesome. So we were here for the Assassin's Creed Unity preview event. We got to see the single player and also co-op missions. It was great. We were there for, since like, what, 10 to 3?
Yeah, really, right? 9 is when we started.
Yeah,
but
9, yeah. But it was a lot of fun, man. And one of the things that was very curious was like the whole co-op, how that was going to work out. You know what I'm saying? But after playing it, I see this as a feature that's going to be really, really fun once everybody gets their hands and start playing it. You know what I'm saying? So
even better.
Yeah, even better.
I can tell you right now, as much as you guys know that I play Destiny at 2 o'clock in the morning every night, this will definitely be a game that will get me off of playing Destiny.
And what is it? Is it because of the single player?
It's both.
Cool. Yeah?
It's really both.
Yeah.
It's really both because playing the single player, which, you know, go ahead and start making fun of me now. I was struggling getting the concept of the controls at first. So, you know, I was dying a lot at first. But once it clicked, the stealth part of it, just, you know, using all of your different weapons and features to look at your surroundings and everything. There's no linear path to solving basically these puzzles, you know, to assassinate someone is very dynamic, which I like. and it's truly open world, which
really
is
open,
yes.
Really like before you were doing the missions, were you exploring, doing other things too before going to the main mission?
Yeah,
like
I was.
Like what are the things you were? Because I discovered a lot of things. I remember walking around and I bump into somebody and he's like, "Hey, 2-player co-op mission."
Yep.
Right. I was like, should I press it? Should I just keep on going?
Well, see, that's the cool thing about it. Once the game is out, it's out.
Yeah, this is a really early build. Yeah. It's not the official retail.
You can just do co-op just randomly as you're on the map because you could pick up a mission. You could bring in a friend if you wanted to, or you could do public matchmaking.
Yeah.
And you can do the co-op mission, and then when you're done, break out of that, go right back to your single-player experience.
Have you done the social mission?
No, I did not.
I did a social mission. Like, I had to go get, like, a chest in some other location and stuff like that. So there's a lot of things to do in this game, man. Like, I pressed the back button. Was it the back button?
Yeah, the map was the back button.
I pressed it. Got to see, like, everything that was going, like, any, like, side quests around that area. And then I zoomed out. I'm like, wow, this city is, like, huge.
Yeah.
Really, really big.
The other thing you have to understand, the section that we play is just one small portion. Once the whole thing opens up, I mean, you're going to spend, like, hours just digging around for treasure chests. And I mean, even, like, the smaller stuff, like killing criminals that push around people on the street or tackling, you know, what was it, pickpockets that were running off and everything. Like, that was always fun because it makes me think, like, I'm an NFL football player that, you know, by the way, is not abusive. Just tackling a football. Anyway. Anyway, I'm just saying there's a lot you can do. And we only saw, like, the tip of the iceberg. When this game comes out in November, it's going to be like, you're going to be up, like, till 4 in the morning.
Right.
Playing it like crazy.
One other thing that I was doing a lot was looking for bells, just, like, to mess it up so they won't call, like, for other people to come along and attack me.
You disable those alarms.
Yeah, so I did that a lot. I found, like, a good 10, maybe between 5 to 10 of those. Yeah. So.
Well, see, that's the other cool thing. Like, I did a 2-player co-op mission with Leslie Fortoy, my new best friend.
And, shout out to Leslie.
And while we were doing our mission, because it is truly a living, breathing world that's going on around you, kind of like you mentioned with the pickpocket thing, that just dynamically happened. We broke off from our primary mission, did that, and then went right back into our co-op mission, which I thought was so cool. That, to me, that's the beauty of it, is you can have your single-player experience, your main missions, but there's all these side quests that you can do at the same time, and they're constantly changing. No two people will have the same experience when they go into
game. Yeah.
And you won't approach the situation the same either. It's it's very dynamic, and I really like that about the game.
One thing I want to discuss, I believe they changed the combat up. Because normally normally you could just walk in and chow, 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 and everything like that. Here, these guys, some of them just came to play and they'll stab you out of nowhere. And it's just, they actually have these little level up stars. Well, not stars, but little circles that shows you how tough they really are.
Right.
And some of the street police are ridiculous. Like, they will not hesitate shooting you at close range. It's kind of ridiculous just how crazy the odds can turn against you. So you have to think things out a little more strategically, which I kind of like. Because he's like, you know, like, there's this group of three guys. Okay, but wait, there are two guards over there. There's a sniper up there. You know, we have to, like, figure this out. And, you know, otherwise you go in running in with, like, axes grinding and everything like that. It's just, it's bad news.
Well, see, that's the other cool thing about it is you have the option of upgrading your character how you see fit. So there was a stealth option that I took because you get, like, whatever these points are that you can't
assign. I took more melee.
Yeah, I took one for stealth where my stealth option is, like, you had one where you could disguise yourself as another person temporarily, but I took one where I could dynamically just sit down somewhere and I just blend into the environment and the
guards, they will miss you.
They'll completely miss me.
Okay.
You know, things like that, which is real cool.
I mean, I like that part a lot, man. And also, everybody had, like, a different experience. Like, nobody was, like, had the same situation with, like, with the enemies. They change different locations. And let me tell you, it took me at least 2 tries to pass the main mission that we're playing of the church.
Yeah.
For you, the thing that was taking you long, it wasn't killing. No,
It wasn't killing.
It wasn't killing. It was escaping the church because of the enemies. They were really, really tough, and there was a lot of them. But that's why you got to take your time.
Exactly.
Like, it can't be like, okay, before a previous Assassin's Creed game, I would just go kill and run. This time it was like, Let me look around. Let me use my eagle vision. Let me see what's around here. And thing is, too, getting into the location inside was a little tricky, too, because I went all around the area, and I couldn't find no one. Then I found one, like, randomly. I'm like, all right, this is the part that
well,
I gotta
go
inside.
Thing Danny's talking about is basically the one mission that everyone had in this preview that we were doing is you had to get inside this church, I guess it was.
Yes, it was a church.
To assassinate this person. And if you look, there was 10 different ways that you could get in the church.
Yeah.
There were two different hidden ways to kill him.
Yeah.
And then there was, I forget how many other options to kill him out in the open. But then that was the trick. Once you kill him, you then have to escape. And there,
that's
the
hard
there
part.
Were different dynamic ways that you could actually escape. And that's where I was struggling.
Yeah.
Is, all right, I kill him, no problem.
I climbed up. I don't even know and how I did it.
I just doubled back the way I came in. And that usually is no problem unless somebody's like, hey, wait a minute. And then all of a sudden I got 10 guys on my ass.
It is hilarious that you just said that. I didn't even think of that. I didn't think, oh, wait, go back the way you came in.
Yeah, I could just climb back up here. Yeah, oh, this is easy.
But the funny thing is, I wound up escaping by taking this underground passage. I don't know
really?
How you got out.
I got out from the top. I went back up.
And one of the developers came by as he saw me leaving. He was like, that's actually another way that you can get in.
Really?
Yeah, and you come in completely undetected.
But where it takes you, where? From underground, when you went through there,
it brings you right back. It takes you into
the
sewer,
front,
to the sewers, and you're just back out in the city.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah,
that's a perfect example how everybody's gonna have a different experience.
But here's the one thing: when we're talking to Alex, who's the creative director for AC Unity, he was saying that compared to Black Flag, double the size.
Double.
And for those of you who played Black Flag was freaking huge. But the city of Paris is double the size of what we had with Black Flag.
Yeah. Which part of the game that you guys are excited more about? Like the customizing your character, the single player, playing four-player co-op?
I think the four-player co-op is nuts. We played, a heist mode?
Yeah, the heist mode.
Where we had to go into this big building. We had to look for paintings and everything like that. And then, it's like if gunny guards notice you or anything like that, you lose part of a reward. But, screw it. We were all just rampaging in there, stabbing guys and everything. It was not Ocean's 11. It was bloody Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
It was really a lot of fun. If you're on board with the right team, you guys can execute, the perfect heist. I think that's a lot of fun. I mean, co-op's good, too, but you got to be careful, who you partner with. Because, the two times I tried it, one time it was just completely unsuccessful. Other time it was great. So it really depends. I think the four-player, though, that's got a lot of potential. Yeah. So.
Anything else? I don't know what else I could bring up.
Well, no, I mean, just, when we talk to the historian Maxima, I'm bad on names, but you guys are hearing it in interviews. Just the fact that they're trying to really represent what the French Revolution was during the 1800s. You're going to have some historically accurate characters like Napoleon is in the game before he actually took power, things like that. You're going to interact with him. And they tried to truly recreate the city of Paris during the 1800s, which I think is pretty cool.
It's got the cathedral.
Yeah.
It's got a couple. I mean, it doesn't have an Eiffel Tower yet down here, but, it's like everything else looks like, it looks like streets of Paris. I mean, some people, maybe wait, this looks like Venice. But, I mean, you could just tell, certain aspects of it, they really went artistically all out to show the detail. And, inside the building. You can go in, inside several buildings, and it's, seamless. You don't have to worry about, waiting 10 seconds to load or whatever.
Now, he did mention at one point in an interview that something with the cathedral, I forget exactly what it was, hadn't been built yet when the game took place.
Uh-huh.
But it provided a great gameplay mechanic, so they added it into the game. So they are taking liberties where they see fit as far as adding to the gameplay experience because, like they said, this is still a game. You know what I mean? They want you to have fun with it. But, I mean, overall, I'm excited that I got hands-on with it because I wasn't a big Assassin's Creed fan until Black Flag.
Yeah.
Black Flag is the first one that I truly got in-depth with, and this takes it to that next step.
It's
the first true next-gen version of Assassin's Creed, and it looks the part. It really does.
Two things. One, I forgot to mention how I found out about the area that I went inside the church. I was walking around top of the building, and I heard that the music was a little louder by a certain area. I'm like, wait a minute. Is there, a window open, and I found it, and I went inside.
Yeah.
So that's another way how you discover the one underground. We was just running around, and you found it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was running for my life. Oh, get out of here.
Just follow the shrieks, you know, yeah. Whatever, something like that.
And number two, one thing we have to talk about is the environment. Like, so many people walking around the streets.
Well, Alex brought this up during our interview in Assassin's Creed 1, and they're talking about the whole crowd stealth mechanic that they put with Assassin's Creed 1. 200 people, which at the time hadn't been done before.
Groundbreaking.
This one, 10,000. They can do
that's
on screen.
A lot of people.
And they're full AI characters.
See, all I can think of is, like, what was it, like, last year when they tried to make Dynasty Warriors with, like, all these guards and everything like that, and they kept glitching out and disappearing and everything like that? I mean, it's like, I didn't think a video game would be able to capture that big a crowd, because obviously if it's glitching out and it's Dynasty Warriors. But then this game came along, it almost looks amazing, like, how many people they can cram into the game. It's really something.
And they fully admitted during the presentation before we got hands-on that this is the base for them to iterate on in the future Assassin's Creed game. So while a lot of these things that we're excited about now, it's only going to get better as we move forward in the franchise.
Oh, one thing I want to mention, because here's the thing. You know, every time you finish a mission from the last game, you'll show, like, a rate this memory. I asked that question because I was curious. I rated, you know, I'll put, like, if I like the mission, I'll put a full five stars, I think it was, or four stars, I can't remember. If I didn't like it, I'll put, like, one or two, whatever, you know. So I asked him, hey, how important is that for you guys, the team, the dev team? He's like, look, that's very important because for future Assassin's Creed games, that will help us come out with better missions based on your feedback. So anybody that gets this game, make sure to rate those missions. The ones that you don't like, let them know. The ones that you like, let them know. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that also brings up the fact of with the companion app, they have the feature of the heat maps where you can pull it up on your iPad or whatever, and you can look at the map, and you can see where everyone is going, where the most kills are happening, the paths that people are taking to complete certain missions and all that. So you can look at that data and use that to kind of help you go through the game, or you can decide, well, I see everyone's going this way, I'm going to go the other way and see if I can find another way to do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, by the way, it's also available for Android and Windows.
Windows almost fell out of my chair. I was like, what?
Yeah. All right. Oh, you were going to say something?
Well, no, I mean, with the whole Unity experience, I think there's only, like, two things that come into question now. Number one, are we going to miss the ship battles? Because I thought that was one of the best parts of Black Flag last year when you got in the middle of ship battles.
I was not impressed with the ship battles, sorry.
Yeah, and we were talking about it. See, that's funny you bring that up, because that was what attracted me to Black Flag. I didn't like so much the actual assassin part of Black Flag.
But I did like that
Whereas
part.
This one, I'm like, I'm really digging the assassinations in this.
Well, at least they could play it in Rogue, so whatever. And then the second thing is, you know, all throughout the day with our demo and everything like that, they never once reflected on whoever the modern character is that ties in with the whole story.
I don't think it matters anymore.
I don't think it does. And I think hopefully with Unity, they'll focus more on what happens in the past and kind of leave the fluff that was in Black Flag out of it.
Well, it almost looks like, going by the co-op missions, they're going to use the future stuff to kind of be your voice into the game to let you know what's going on.
Yep.
Versus, all right, let's cut to this whole future scene and waste an hour doing this, and then we're going to go back, which I'm perfectly fine with. Honestly, if they did a 5-minute cutscene at the beginning of the game with the future stuff and then just dropped you into France and you stayed there, I'd be perfectly fine with that.
You know, we definitely got to play online once this game comes out.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely. Hopefully, you know, when review time comes up, that's what we'll do. We'll be able to get some 4-player co-op going on and
definitely want to see, like, everybody's different experiences playing, like, the mission, so we definitely got to talk about that too.
Well, that's one other thing real quick to bring up with the co-op experience is you basically have, like, your special ability, like, the last co-op I did, mine was be able to heal the entire group. You have another one where you can disguise the entire group, things like that, so we can create our own little custom characters, and you bring that character into the co-op portion of it, so you can basically build a unique team of these four different people with unique abilities so that you can tackle each situation.
Anyway, one other thing I want to talk about here, it's also going to be interesting to see what scope of weapons these people have, because there are a ton of weapons. You're talking, like, long weapons, you're talking heavy weapons, one-handed, the Phantom Blade, which looks insane. It needs a little bit better range, but, you know, if you can use that to shoot, like, lethal darts or the berserker darts, it's really something. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what everybody brings to the picture in terms of the co-op experience. Like, okay, what do you have? Well, I have an axe. Okay, well, I have a spear, you know, something like that. And seeing the different effects that your group has as a result, I think it'd be pretty cool.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
There was somebody was showing me the how to pin with the pin unlock the door.
Right.
One person was having a lot of issues with that. Another one was like a pro with it.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how's that going to be once the game comes out.
Well, and think about it. You're going to want to make sure you have an expert lock picker on your co-op.
Because I honestly, I was pretty bad with that. Yeah. I couldn't even do it. I was really bad with that, man. So were you pretty good with that or no?
No.
Terrible. No? Terrible? No. But when it comes to killing others, killing the enemies, I was the man with that. You know what I'm saying? So I need an expert. Please hit me up.
Well, see, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say with a group, the cool thing is you're going to have guys playing different ways and yet still mesh together. Take, for instance, like you need to have an assault on the front door, okay, with two guards there or whatever. You can have one guy trying to, like, you know, be the distraction as you come walking in. Two guys coming in from the side. Even one guy trying to fire maybe a berserker dart just in case his backup. Having some each one go in with, like, a team strategy in mind, but different roles in the team.
Exactly.
I think it'll play out really well. Otherwise, if you have four guys charging the door, I'd be like, what the hell? No, come on.
Well, see, and that's what started to play out in that last co-op mission I was doing with Leslie, where she was setting it up, she was getting in a strategic position, setting a smoke bomb, and then I'm coming from the other side. I'm assassinating everyone, and we're going back and forth doing that. So we had a real good team dynamic going. I just think the possibilities on that are going to be almost endless of strategies to be able to do.
And they said they're changing up the location of the exit, the entryway, and where everything is.
That's what I really like. It's that
so
every time is different.
Exactly.
All right, so we're going to play the interviews now, Paris.
Are we going to come back and talk about something else after, or are we done?
What could we
Because I got some thoughts on Destiny.
Oh, so we could record a separate audio right now.
We'll do that.
All right. So we'll be right back. We're going to play some interviews during the event. And, live from Vegas. Woo! Let's go.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
All right, so Paris, we're live here at the Assassin's Creed Unity event. So what's going on?
We've been playing the game. We did a little co-op. It's been a lot of fun.
And now we're going to be talking about story, right?
Yeah, we're going to talk about the actual story of Assassin's Creed, and we have a very special guest. You want to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Maxime Durand, historian in Assassin's Creed Unity. Mm-hmm. So I've been working in Assassin's Creed for the last 4 years and a half. Okay. So I played a part in every Assassin's Creed game from close or far, so last six of them.
All right, tell us a little bit about the story.
So what we have in Assassin's Creed Unity is actually the story of Arno. So he's not a noble, he's not a commoner, he's kind of in the middle. Mm-hmm. And actually he's experiencing the French Revolution from his point of view, and from the point of view of the Assassins and the Templars. So what's the French Revolution about? It's about a whole change in human history. I mean, for Westerners, it's a big change because it's the end of a 1,000 or 1,500 years old regime. That's the feudal regime in Europe. And it's just crazy because that was that was impossible a couple of years before. In the 18th century, it's the century of the Enlightenment. So everyone was thinking about ideas about how should the human race go forward. Mm-hmm. And then they were stuck into a system where no change could be done. Like if you're a prince, you become a king. If you're a commoner, you stay a commoner all your life. And that's the French Revolution. So this moment where it explodes because people are tired of that old regime, and now it's opportunities opening up for people. What?
So being a historian and this taking place during the 1800s with the French Revolution, how closely did you work with the development team to make sure everything that they were recreating for Paris was historically accurate?
So the way we work is actually when we start the production or the development of the game, we go into a lot of the general stuff from the Revolution. So we watch movies, TV series, we read a lot of books. We look we've visited the city of Paris also, the core team. So try to get a good idea of the period we're going to talk about. So the French Revolution, again, it's we're trying to set things right for the city that's huge, that's beautiful, that's very dense, but also that it's a city that was filthy. And so when we get the ideas of what the city was like in the time period, it inspires us to have a gameplay opportunities. That's how we redefine the way we're going to do the game. That's how we redefine the script. That's how we try to understand how we're going to bring Arno's story into life. So we're trying to see how we can deal with historical characters, historical events, and landmarks to make sure that it's fun, it's relevant, that you can see this whole city from different points of view. So the more we go into production, the more we go into details. So we'll try to find the information about like very, very tiny details about some characters. So when you play, for instance, a side content mission, well, you can play with something that you couldn't see necessarily on a public encyclopedia. I mean, we dig a lot, and so we can give you a flavor of that city of the time period.
Now, how do you handle a situation with historical characters in basically a fictional world? In that, I'll take a TV show like Boardwalk Empire, for example, where you have an Al Capone, you have a Lucky Luciano, but the lead character is a fictional character. So in the game, you mentioned, I'm assuming we're going to run into some historical accurate characters during the game. How do you handle that as far as interaction goes? Are you taking any creative freedoms to where you can go on your own path, or are you sticking to exactly how it went down during history?
So the way we're building the city and interacting with the characters is a tiny line. I'd say most of the time we try to stay as accurate as possible, but we always keep in mind that our goal is to have fun and make this game fun. So if there are limits, we try to measure the weight of the consequence if we go away a bit from history and we go with more liberties, and that's how we decide if we're going to change it or not. For instance, I'll give you two examples. You have Napoleon that you can interact with in the game. I mean, it's a super important character, and especially during the French Revolution, because he's not the emperor yet, so you can still have an interaction with him that's believable. Like, you don't have to go through many, many processes to get to meet him. You see him in a mission that's called the Storming of the Tuileries, and he's there, and that's recorded in history. Like, he was there, but people don't really understand. Historians don't understand why he was there or what happened. It's a gray zone. That's perfect for us, because we can interact with him, with our fictional character. Like, we're based on facts. So we stayed true to history in that case. But in the case of Notre Dame, the cathedral, we decided to take some liberties in recreating it. So it's just an example, but the spire on top of the cathedral was destroyed during the French Revolution. So the one that was built after was built in the 1850s, so about 50, 60 years after the French Revolution. So we decided to keep that one because the experience, it's the highest reach point in Paris. I mean, it's way was better for gameplay than just saying, we will not do it because it's accurate. So you have the information in this encyclopedia you have in the game, so you can always compare true history with what we have in the game. I think we show where we derive with history, and so people understand the choices we've made, but they have fun, actually.
You mentioned a lot about movies and books. Can you mention any of those that inspire you guys to...
Yeah, absolutely.
So come up with ideas and stuff. So
why we like movies and books is they give a lot of information quickly to the team. Obviously, we do a lot of research with very precise history books, but movies are fun. So you have an example is the Perfume, movies from I think 2005, 2006, based on a book from Patrick Susskind. Mm-hmm. So it's a movie about how filthy the city of Paris was at that time. Mm-hmm. And so it's very visual. It's very interesting for us. On the other side, we went for movies like there are two movies that were made in the beginning of the 1990s that are called the Enlightenment Years. Mm-hmm. So the French Revolution. It was like a collaborative movie between France and the United States. And it's more about politics, about we're following historical characters. So we're based on a lot of these, obviously. Mm-hmm. It gives a lot of information and cool feedback for the team.
Was it the same, too, for music also, getting inspired for that, for the game?
Sorry?
With music? Can you mention anything about the music side?
Yeah, absolutely. So what you have in the game, obviously, every ward has different a set of sound because of what people are doing, what kind of work people are doing. Mm-hmm. And we have, six, seven songs in the game that are genuine from the French Revolution. Mm-hmm. They're funny, I guess, for 21st century people. but they're very relevant. And the historical the instruments, the musical instruments that we have in the game are all historical, and we use groups to come over to the studio and we record them. So Tavern Music, for instance, it gives a very deep feeling when you get in there. You feel like, yeah, it's brawling inside the taverns.
Right. Awesome.
I guess you saw that.
Yeah. All right, cool.
Yeah, and just final question again, because I'm a big history buff and you're the historian for Assassin's Creed. Where can people go to find more information about the French Revolution?
Well, first, the encyclopedia in-game, the Animus database. Mm-hmm. We work with the external historians to do that. Again, it's the biggest one we've ever built, so a lot of information. Otherwise, I guess, again, there are so many books about the French Revolution, or even, I think, if people want to keep the experience of you know, digital experience of a medium that's very accessible, there's a National Library of France that has most of the archives public, so there you can access them on the internet. That's a lot of the resources we're using for the game. There's the National Museums in France. Also, they have a website where they just digitalized everything they have, like in their museum. It's just insane. So it's very interesting. People can compare what we did in the game and what are our you know, our source of inspiration. So it's just part of it. Otherwise, I mean, they can always study and get a degree in history. So I'll go to any college library and they'll find a lot of the details that we have. We've took from the game, so you know, sometimes you'll read a book that of 300 pages and you only get two ideas, but they can make the big difference into the details and make the city more believable. Right. It doesn't feel like a cardboard set. So.
All right, well, again, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Hey, this is Paris with Gamertag Radio, and I'm here at the Assassin's Creed preview event, and I'm here once again with Leslie Fortoy,
the
producer for co-op on Assassin's Creed Unity. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. So we had the conversation at E3. Yep. So can you just recap quickly what went into the decision to go with co-op for Assassin's Creed Unity?
So we did a bunch of surveys and digging into forums and stuff like that, and we found that co-op was the number one requested feature from fans. So this is something that we've been wanting to put in Assassin's Creed for a while. But when we started working on Assassin's Creed Unity, we had a mandate to say, okay, this is going to be the first Assassin's Creed specifically for new gen. So that gave us a really great opportunity to start from scratch, to go back and rewrite our engine to support co-op and support all the online features and replication and all that other tech stuff that we need to get co-op working.
Mm. And how's that going to work from scratch all the way to like to the end? Let's say I'm ahead with missions and he's not.
Right.
How's that going to work out though?
Like, so as you progress through the game, you're playing as Arno and you each have your own version of Arno. And as you're playing through the single-player campaign, you're going to be unlocking new skills. You're also going to be collecting skill points and money and stuff like that in the game. So you're going to be basically customizing your character as you like. So for sure, there's going to be situations where, say, you guys don't want to play together and you've been playing maybe like 15 hours and Paris has just started. It doesn't really matter. That's fine because you're going to be able to join... you're going to be able to join together and complement each other's skills. So, you know, even if maybe you don't have all the skills that you need, you know, you're going to be able to rely on each other to help each other. So we have things like co-op skills, like group heal. So, you know, if you maybe you're not such a good player, you can be healed by your co-op partners.
Well, that actually leads me into another question, and this is one thing kind of in the gaming community that I've seen a lot since, you know, the co-op has been announced for the game.
Yeah.
How is the matchmaking going to work? Like, for example, I was playing the single-player campaign, and I saw an icon pop up, like a vendor, whatever you want to call them, and it basically was a co-op mission, and I decided to accept it, and it just said waiting on other player. So if I want to play specifically with Danny, how would we be able to do that in-game?
Sure. So, I mean, there's a couple ways. So, I mean, there's sort of like traditional matchmaking. There's also direct invites, so you could directly invite Danny into your game. We also have things in the world. We also have taverns in the world. And when you go inside a tavern, you're going to see ghosts of your online friends. So if you go up to those ghosts, you're going to be able to see like where they are in the game. Like maybe one of them is playing a four-player Brotherhood mission, and But they only have three players in the mission right now. So you could actually join that mission in progress and become their fourth player. And so we wanted to try to keep it as seamless and as easy as possible to join together. Another cool thing is you don't only play missions in co-op. You know, after a mission is over, you're back in the city and in the world, and you could just be exploring the world together as a team.
And how the two-player co-op game work, it's going to work out too, similar to the four-player co-op?
It's pretty much the same thing. The only reason why some missions are maximum two players and others are maximum four players is difficulty. So we don't scale the difficulty based on the number of players. The missions are set difficulties. There are randomized things and things that are variable within those missions, but in terms of difficulty, they're set.
So the season pass has been announced. Now, as far as co-op goes, will we also get additional missions via DLC?
That's something I'm not actually aware of, so I can't even speak to that. So,
well,
yeah, sorry about that.
Let me follow that up by asking this. The co-op missions, they obviously have a story element to them as well, but is it possible we'll see additional like challenge missions? Like we'll basically go out on a four-player brotherhood mission, I guess is what you would call it, where it may not be related directly to the story, but there's some type of you know, leaderboard challenge or something where basically we can challenge each other within the community, like how quickly can I complete this mission, or do you do everything, like various goals, so that it may not necessarily be story related, but it's timed event, something that people can go back and play over and over again, and they'll have an incentive.
I'm actually not so familiar with things that are related to leaderboards, but there are definitely things within co-op missions that kind of have that friendly competition thing going. I think that's kind of what you're asking. So one of the co-op missions that we have, that one of the types that we have, so I talked a little bit about the Brotherhood missions, which are more the narrative co-op missions. We also have heists. And heists are, again, you can play two-player or four-player. And they're a lot more systemic. So the idea with heists, every heist is sort of set up the same way. You have to infiltrate a heavily guarded location. You have to steal the loot, and you have to get out. The trick is if you get detected, then your loot bar is going to go down. So the idea is to play as stealthy as possible. But everyone has their own stealth meter, essentially. So there's sort of like that friendly competition where like who gets the most loot at the end of the mission.
Let's say I would like to invite a couple of my friends. Can I check out like their progress, like how far they are in the game or not?
That's actually a really good question, and I'm not sure I can answer that one.
Okay,
all right. I apologize.
It's okay. No worries.
Well, let me follow that up again. We touched on it briefly. So how will the matchmaking work? I had a prompt where it just said it was searching for players. So if I didn't have any of my active friends playing Assassin's Creed right now, will it go out onto Xbox Live or PlayStation Network
exactly.
and look for random people?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And then, you know, basically you'll see a timer go up. And if you decide, hey, you know what, I've waited too long, you can always cancel out of that search.
And will there be an option to basically have it friends only? Like, let's say I'm playing and I want to do a co-op mission. And I only want my friends to join.
Yeah, you can play.
Lock it down to
you
that
can play in private as well. So you'll have two options. You'll have play in public or play in private.
Okay. Oh, no. I think that's it. Thank you again, Leslie. We really appreciate it. I'm sure we'll probably talk again soon.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
All right, so we're still here at the Assassin's Creed Unity event, and we have more interviews coming up right now, so please present yourself.
My name is Alex Amancio, Creative Director on Assassin's Creed Unity.
All right. And?
And I'm Vincent Pombriam, Senior Producer on Assassin's Creed.
Cool. You have first question?
Can you talk about how long has Unity been in development?
So it has been close to 4 years. I guess we'll be celebrating in November the actual 4 years. So out of that, we've spent maybe 2 years mostly working on the technology. So rebuilding all our tools to improve productivity and allow the game to become online multiplayer compatible and work on the graphics. And then the last 2 years have been really mostly about building the game itself, the content, the story, the missions, and all of that.
And what are some of the technical advantages going to, with this being the first true next-gen Assassin's Creed that you found so far?
I mean, obviously the graphics are amazing. We redid the render engine, so it's physically based. Things look a lot more realistic. Our lighting is completely different. Now we have we actually have something we call ambient occlusion. We calculate photon impact. So again, it looks just you know, a lot more more dynamic, more real, a lot of atmospheric effects. We're able to reach crowds of over 5,000 NPCs. One scene actually has over 10,000 NPCs. For the first time, we're actually able to... the size of our city, I mean, is just huge. If you take the previous game we made, Black Flag, and take all of the landmass, because it's you know, there's some sailing, but if you take all of the physical landmass, clump it together, it's actually smaller than Paris. Not only is it a large city, but it's a one-for-one scale. It's the first time we actually create a city that's actually... The buildings are real sized. Then we've integrated seamless interiors. You can actually, about a fourth of every building in Paris has a complete interior. We have undergrounds, we have catacombs, sewers. Every major landmark is modeled outside and inside. So, I mean, all of this stuff we could never have done with previous gen consoles.
Can you talk about a little bit about the control for this game too?
Yep. I mean, you know, we changed the fundamental... There's three pillars in Assassin's Creed. There's combat, there's stealth, and there's navigation. Mm-hmm. We changed all of them, you know, to their lowest level, which means that controls also change. For example, for navigation, we've actually added a new control, right trigger B, which actually allows you to parkour down. Before, you could only parkour up. So to get off of buildings, you usually had to find a haystack and jump down. Now you can actually do it dynamically everywhere you want. Fight is different. Fundamentally different. It's more like strategy fencing, so, you know, block, dodge, parry. It's a lot deeper mechanic, so it changes the way you actually play with it. And stealth has changed. Like, you actually add a stealth button. You press this button, and your character goes into sort of a stealth mode. We actually have a cover system now. You press A, the character snaps the cover. So all of these different innovations that we added, again, like, they boil down to different controller scheme.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You were listening to
Gamertag Radio. Hey, two-part question. Why pick the French Revolution? And you also mentioned about the size of Paris. So how accurate of a representation is this of Paris during that time period?
So the French Revolution, why did we pick it? It could have been anything else, to be honest, out of our list of favorite settings. So what we have on AC is a long-term roadmap with several really interesting settings that we could do eventually. And we made this decision almost 4 years ago now. It was next on our list, simple as that. We feel that it's a pivotal moment in history, and these are important for Assassin's Creed in general. People can relate to those, they can do research. It's quite easy to find very interesting information about those, and people have all sorts of expectations as well. So for at the very least, you know, French Revolution will symbolize the guillotine, the beheadings, the fall of monarchy, the beginning of a new regime, the charter for human rights. So then for more educated people, there's a ton more reasons why the French Revolution is also an interesting moment. So it felt great to do that for Assassin's Creed, and also we think that with the technology we have now, we can probably give it justice with you know, the massive crowds, the feeling of chaos of people, you know, in the streets, and overall that's it.
And I mean, Paris is the most visited city in the world. It's arguably one of the most beautiful cities. Next-gen graphics, what better setting to actually be able to showcase this? Plus, the revolution, as Vince mentioned, it's all about crowds. Back in 2007 with AC1, we introduced the concept of social stealth, like crowds, in an open-world game. It was, back then, it was revolutionary. We had 200 people on screen, and it was impressive. Today, we really wanted to take that back and sort of not create an iterative process, but create something that would jolt the industry again. So crowds of 5,000 people, 10,000 people. I mean, what other setting within Paris, other than the French Revolution, could we get crowds that size, but they were active, not passive? So, I mean, it all converged. It just made sense.
How challenging was it to add the four-player co-op and two-player co-op? Because this is the first time for you guys.
It's really challenging. And you know, fundamentally, we've been wanting to do co-op for the longest time on this brand. The thing is, the changes it requires to the basic code are incredible. And because this is the first next generation Assassin's Creed and we had to completely recode like most of the engine, it was just the perfect opportunity to do this. So plus, I mean, if you look at our previous attempt at multiplayer. I mean, it was a great experience. It was a great game. But the thing is, when you think about it, it was a different experience than the actual core experience that people buy the game for. And however good this game was, its major hurdle was that. It was a different control scheme, different mechanics. So when we were thinking about co-op, the basic principle of it was like, how do we get to have people partake in what they want from this game, the actual core experience of Assassin's Creed, but be able to share it with friends? Co-op just seemed like, you know, a no-brainer. It just felt good because we had already introduced the concept of the Brotherhood before, right? It was just automated. Now, what if all those other assassins were actual people? So this is where we sort of started from. And then, of course, we had to find our way. What exactly does it mean to play co-op in Assassin's Creed? It can mean any kind of different things. I mean, games like Left 4 Dead, for example, will attack you. The world itself is the main co-op aggregator. It attacks you with so much challenge that you need to band together. Other games will create artificial gating, like you need to turn levers at the same time to open doors, and that's how they get you to play co-op. For us, it was all about complementary play. We figured out, like, once we started testing, when you put different players together, they automatically take on different roles. And by adding customization, we can add to these roles and have people, you know, be able to take on the roles in a more profound way.
Why leave out multiplayer?
Why did we leave out multiplayer? Well, as Alex was explaining, our first ambition has always been to be able to share the Assassin's Creed experience, which is at its core a very single player experience. We've embraced that first starting with being able to be together in the same universe, in the same world, and play together as assassins, co-op. Competitive, appeals to a certain audience, and we think we have a market for that, and we've tried it before. We knew we have a really strong and a living community. But, just doing co-op was a massive effort on our part, and we want to do things right. So our first focus was co-op, and for the future, we'll see.
So following back up again on Unity, can you go into some of the weapons and the character customizations that you were talking about previously?
We've always had a certain level of customization. We've had suits, we've had weapons, but the thing is that they were just aesthetic, right? They didn't really have stats. The idea is that if you're going to create a game where you're going to open up the missions more, allow players to play the way they want to play, then you have to increase that variety by giving them tools to be more innovative, more creative. So the skills are one thing. Like there are a certain aspect of it. And by choosing and picking your skills, you know, getting skill points and then using the skill points to buy skills, you can actually specialize and, you know, sort of skew the game more towards your own playstyle. And then the gear elements actually have another layer. I mean, they give you modifiers that really have a direct impact on the way you play. For example, a hood might make you blend 30% faster into a crowd, which means that if you like playing stealth, it's a real advantage. And then, boots might make you be able to fall from a greater height without taking damage. And then the weapons, they actually have four different metrics. You know, there's the actual damage, we have range, we have the ability to parry, and then we actually have the speed at which you can fight with the weapon. So you can start multiplying all of that, those different factors together, and it really gives you the flexibility needed to be able to just, you know, adjust the game to your own playstyle.
Let's talk about the season pass. I know you guys announced that a couple days ago. You want to talk about it, or?
I'll talk about it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, those games that you announced, is that going to be available day one, or that's going to be like later on or after a couple months? Or,
oh, you mean the
Chronicles of China?
So,
and
I don't have the information for the exact thing,
okay,
but I can talk to you about if you want.
Yeah, sure. Cool.
The idea behind that is that we have such a rich universe, so many different characters, so many different settings. Mm-hmm. It just gives us a new opportunity to explore those different characters and those different timelines. Mm-hmm. Plus, the fact that it's not an HD game, that it's a different experience, mm-hmm, what it opens up for us is the fact that, like, we've always wanted to sort of push the art style of the game in a different way. But, you know, Assassin's Creed is pretty realistic. I mean, we stylize it. We give you, it's more like a film, right? We take reality and we stylize it for more impact, but it's still very realistic. This was a real good opportunity for us to be able to take the iconic art style of a certain era and period and bring it to life in a game. And this is why in the first chapter, it's all about China, and it's a character called Xiao Yun that we introduced in a short film that was released with Revelations called Embers. And the style is like Chinese ink paintings. So to be able to actually bring that art style to life was really cool for us. And it was also a way of exploring a different experience with Assassin's Creed, like something more like a side scroller, like a 2.5D Mark of the Ninja type thing.
All right.
Final question for me. Having had time to actually sit down and play the game, go through the co-op, do some of the single-player missions, this is, when you talk about an open world, it excites me that it's very dynamic, in that even in the co-op missions, everything isn't the same the second time you go back to it. It's constantly evolving. It's constantly changing. Now, during the presentation you gave to us earlier, you were mentioning some of the challenges and some of the ways you were trying to solve how to tackle an open world and keep the players engaged. Can you kind of go into that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, the structure. Our previous structure was, the main motivation that players had was all about narrative. And this is the typical motivation that most games have. The thing with open world games and narrative motivations is that the narrative tries to push you forward with, narrative urgency. The open world tries to encourage you to explore and, experience side stuff. The thing is, those two things are not very compatible because, it sometimes feels like you're playing two games within one single game. So we thought for a long time how we could sort of evolve the concept of open world in Assassin's Creed to something different and try to find a different motivation. It turns out that what we actually landed on was character progression. Arno's progression from novice to master assassin is the main motivator. So what that does concretely in the world is that every activity you then do within the open world contributes to Arno's progression, so it feels useful. You have the Arno's main path, Arno's redemption quest. By creating, by doing sequences, you unlock categories of skills. But to then buy the skills, you need to do, for example, Brotherhood missions or heists to get skill points, which you can then use to buy these skills. And then if you do any of the hundreds of different Paris quests that you can find through exploration, these are, stories, meaningful stories that you find that all have to do with unknown or little-known Parisian legends, characters, stuff like that. You do these stories, it gives you money, it gives you weapons, gear. And again, all of these different elements contribute to making your assassin, to making Arno stronger and better, and to making Arno play more like you want to play. So everything feeds back. Arno is sort of the glue that holds everything together, and Paris is the three-dimensional manifestation of the actual game structure. And the cool thing about this is, hopefully, everybody's playthrough will be different because you're finding your own missions through Paris. And this is, I think, the really cool thing is that, yeah, we have a strong narrative and a strong linear narrative like all other assassins. We even push it a little bit further. But the thing is, the way you explore Paris and the stories that you find make the real story about Assassin's Creed Unity your own path that you've carved through Paris. So this is, to me, is like really what new gen open world means to Assassin's Creed anyways.
Bonus question before we go, because I forgot to ask it earlier. Companion app, can you talk about that a little bit and what people can expect from it?
So we wanted a meaningful companion app. We wanted something that does what it's meant for. It's accompany the game and give it the benefit in itself is to able to have that that reach that the game itself doesn't always have. So it's all the comfort features. It's about it being able to manipulate the map itself, to explore it, to see it when you're sitting somewhere else and in your living room in front of your TV. It's being able to use it to browse through the entries of the database and to learn more about the Paris and all of the different anecdotes that you'll collect through exploring the world. It's about basically being able to see the stats of your character. So it's a real, it's a real companion app. It's not a gimmick. It's not a side thing. It's not a game. It's really what it's meant for. And I think we wanted to go for a highly polished thing, we're very proud of it.
And when can people pick up Assassin's Creed Unity, and on what platforms?
So Assassin's Creed Unity is coming out on November 11th on Xbox One, PS4, and on PC.
Vincent, Alex, thank you for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, so we're back here, and
great interviews, Paris. That was awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Yeah. You know, thank you to Ubisoft for bringing us out here to be able to sit down and get some hands on with the game and talk to the development team. Had a lot of fun.
Shout out to them too, because the setup was pretty awesome.
Yeah,
loved
very
it.
Nice. Loved very
it.
Nice.
So yeah, Paris, we're gonna wrap it up now because we gotta head out.
Yes.
So shout out to everybody out there that have been listening to this week's episode. Shout out to DCD. We've been drinking and eating cupcakes.
ATM cupcakes.
Yeah, I know. There's a cupcake ATM in Vegas. Paris knows exactly where it is. You're like, I'm taking my credit card, getting me a banana cupcake at 3 a.m. And then, you know, but no, I want to give a shout out to you guys. Thanks for having me on the show. Shout out to Ubisoft, Raha, Stone. It's good to, always good to see Stone because Stone's Stone, you know. And of course, you can find my work over there at Newegg's Game Crate site, Retro Magazine, Prima Games, and ALS Daily. So thanks for having me on. And, oh, yeah, one more thing. Shout out to your guys' 500,000 downloads. That's insane. And it's not all Paris. I mean, it is the entire team.
What? No, it's not me at all. That's Danny, man. No,
that's all of us. So yeah. I'll never see me. That's all of us, man. Have a great team.
Giving you a shout out. But thanks again, man. And I look forward to killing everybody with the crew on November 11th.
All right, head over to GamertagRadio.com, post your comments, feedback, and listen to our past episodes. Make sure to also bother Paris all the time on our website.
I do.
Go for it, man. If you disagree with him, hit him up on Twitter, Vicious696. All right, give us a call, 786-273-7GTR. That's 786-273-7GTR. And also email us, fanmail@GamertagRadio.com. Until next time, live from Vegas, this is Godfrey.
Cupcakes.
You're listening to Gamer Tag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Tune in next week.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.